What happens when two brilliant minds meet and discover they complete each other in ways neither expected? In December 1922, Virginia Woolf encountered Vita Sackville-West at a London dinner party and described her as florid, mustached, parakeet-colored. Hardly a romantic first impression. Yet within days, Vita confessed to her husband Harold that she had quite lost my heart to Virginia. This unlikely beginning sparked one of the most extraordinary love affairs in literary history, a relationship that would inspire Virginia's revolutionary novel Orlando and leave behind nearly two decades of intimate correspondence. Their letters reveal something profound, that love can flourish outside traditional boundaries, that passion and intellect need not be separate, and that the most transformative relationships often arrive in unexpected packages. Their first meeting sparked with tension. Virginia found Vita aristocratic, yet artistically dull, a grenadier, hard, handsome, manly. Vita felt instant, overwhelming attraction, seeing Virginia as initially plain, but possessing a sort of spiritual beauty that imposes itself. She was captivated by Virginia's quality of being detached and human, silent till she wants to say something, and then says it supremely well. Early letters revealed careful navigation. Virginia's formal, "Dear Mrs. Nicholson," masked Vita's raw confession to Harold, "I love Mrs. Woolf with a sick passion." When Virginia invited Vita to publish with Hogarth Press in 1924, their professional connection enabled frequent contact. Vita's first visit arrived with theatrical flair, driving up in her large new blue Austin car, wearing a ringed yellow jersey. After she left, Virginia walked and thought of nothing else. Vita responded that she had walked on air all day. By year's end, formalities dissolved into first names and intimate tones. As 1925 unfolded, their correspondence deepened dramatically. Vita praised Mrs. Dalloway as capturing the whole of London in June, marveling at Virginia's English being as limpid as French, yet preserving all the depth of its own peculiar genius. Virginia shared her perfectly romantic and no doubt untrue vision of Vita stamping out the hops in a great vat in Kent, stark naked, brown as a satyr, and very beautiful. When illness struck Virginia, separation became unbearable. She wrote, "I try to invent you, but have only two twigs and three straws to do it with. Able to conjure physical attributes, but unable to imagine what Vita says, proving how little we know anyone, only movements and gestures, nothing connected, continuous, profound." Vita treasured Virginia's letters as the last letter to open of my morning post, like a child keeps the bit of chocolate for the end. Virginia shared profound insights. Style is a very simple matter. It is all rhythm. Once you get that, you can't use the wrong words. By October, Virginia confessed that missing Vita was damned unpleasant, and her plan to cheat the devil by not thinking of Vita wasn't working. Their relationship had evolved beyond mere attraction into something essential. In 1926, their relationship became physical. At a New Year's party, Clive Bell drunkenly asked Vita, "Have you ever gone to bed with Virginia?" Revealing their connection was already gossiped within their circle. When Vita departed for Persia in January, their letters intensified. From Trieste, Vita wrote, "I am reduced to a thing that wants Virginia." Virginia responded passionately, defending herself against Vita's accusation that she merely makes phrases instead of feeling. She described wandering Bloomsbury seeking a barrel organ after Vita left. "I have been dull. I have missed you." After Vita's return in May, they became lovers. By December, Vita told Harold she had slept with Virginia at Rodmell, declaring herself absolutely devoted to her, but not in love. Virginia's diary captures her feelings, describing Vita's splendor and candle-lit radiance, noting her maturity and full-breastedness. Though Virginia considers herself more intellectually organized, she values the maternal protection Vita offers, something she has always most wished from everyone. As Vita departed for Persia in 1927, their separation sparked passionate letters. Vita wrote, "Why aren't you with me? Oh, why?" Virginia called her very distant and beautiful and calm, a lighthouse in clean water, confessing she found herself settling down to wanting you, doggedly, dismally, faithfully. During this absence, Virginia began Orlando, inspired by Vita's aristocratic lineage and gender-fluid essence. She called it the greatest rapture known to me, a novel that would revolutionize biography in a night. The story follows its protagonist through four centuries and a gender transformation, from Elizabethan nobleman to modern woman, Virginia's way of immortalizing Vita and their love. When published in October 1928, Vita deemed it the loveliest, wisest, richest book she'd ever read. Years later, she confessed that reading Orlando always brought tears. Whether it is the mere beauty of the book, or because it is you, or Noel, or all three, I don't know. She declared, "When I am old and dying, I shall cause Orlando to be read aloud to me." As the 1930s progressed, their relationship evolved. Vita became absorbed in creating Sissinghurst's famous gardens, while Virginia developed a friendship with composer Ethel Smith, though she noted, "But dear me, I am not in love with Ethel." No one replaced Vita in her deepest affections. Virginia's February 1935 diary entry captures this shift. "Our friendship is over, not with a quarrel, not with a bang, but as ripe fruit falls." She described Vita as very fat, very much the indolent county lady, run to seed, incurious now about books, interested only in dogs, flowers, and new buildings. Yet Virginia felt no bitterness and no disillusion, only a certain emptiness. World War II brought them closer again. Virginia found comfort in their friendship during this kind of intolerable suspension of all reality. After Vita's August 1940 visit, Virginia noted she is deeply, I mean awkwardly, dumbly affectionate, expressing gratitude that our love has weathered so well. Vita wrote with unguarded emotion, "You know I love you, and you know I like Leonard. There is a difference between love and like." Their last meeting was at Monk's House on February 17, 1941. Virginia's final letter to Vita in March briefly mentioned budgerigars, wondering, "When shall we come? Lord knows." On March 28, 1941, Virginia filled her pockets with stones and walked into the River Ouse. Upon hearing the news, Vita wrote to Harold, "I simply can't take it in, that lovely mind, that lovely spirit." She later reflected, "I still think that I might have saved her if only I had been there." Vita died from cancer on June 2, 1962. Her writing desk at Sissinghurst remains as she left it, decorated with two photographs, one of Harold and the other of Virginia, a final testament to love that transcended conventional boundaries. What makes their story resonate today is the profound truth at its heart. The most transformative relationships create space for both people to be fully themselves. Virginia found maternal protection and passionate admiration. Vita discovered intellectual brilliance and spiritual beauty. Together, they proved that love need not fit conventional molds to be real, lasting, and world-changing. Their relationship whispers across the decades. Be brave enough to love authentically, bold enough to create fearlessly, and trust that such courage leaves the most enduring legacy.